Wilson in, looking for Garza, backside and in for the first goal in Atlanta United history from Yamil Assad.
Take a look at history.
Hi, y'all. And welcome to 5 Stripe Final, the only highly distributed audio discussion discussing all things Atlanta United. And there are many a thing to discuss here on the HDAT today, brought to you by DirtySouthSoccer.com. I'm J. Sam Jones from DirtySouthSoccer.com. Joe Patrick from DirtySouthSoccer.com is also over there. And Joe, say hey.
It's the perfect weekend. It's the perfect weekend.
Practically perfect in every way. Beautiful, beautiful results all around the league, in my opinion. It could get even better by the end of the night when we're recording this. We're recording this on Sunday. Red Bulls have a date with Wayne Rooney, which is never a good thing you want to actually have. But in this case, it could be good for us, because if DC United pulls off a result against Red Bulls, we're sitting rather pretty right now with 8 games left in this one.
That's all well and good, but for me, it was more the perfect weekend, just because obviously we got the win over Orlando, but mainly that it happened on a Friday night, and so just a nice weekend. Nice for us to actually have a couple weekend nights to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it was even better if you actually got to sit down and watch it live.
Where were you?
I was off doing grad student things, and it involved work. Hard work of watching a high school football game, but I couldn't watch the actual game. However, I was paying close attention to you tending the fire of the DSS Twitter account while I was away, and I do have to say, admirable job, for sure. For sure.
Oh, thank you. Well done.
How was the overall experience of that, by the way?
Didn't really get to watch most of the game. Okay. I felt like my head was down in my phone or on my computer tweeting. It's difficult. I commend the job that you do. It's hard to live up to those lofty expectations that you set. The jokes, you know, really they fly off. They're really easy at the beginning of the game, and then once things get stressful, I just start getting very serious, and you can see that trend emerge if you go back and read through the tweets. That just gets more and more serious as you see me start to worry and worry.
It does. It did get a little less lighthearted there towards the end, but then Joseph scored, and we were doing just fine. Speaking of like not being able to see anything but your phone screen for a little bit, that may explain the analysis I put out on this show, is that I've maybe never actually seen an Atlanta United game because I've just been tweeting through it the entire time. So I only catch little bits. So blame that. Hey, Twitter.
Tweeting through it's the way to go, man.
Hey, yeah. Usually a good time. Would have been fun to be on the mic for this one. But either way, it was fun to watch from afar and just kind of see the reaction go on as Joseph Martinez breaks the MLS record for goals in a season. 28 now, Joseph Patrick. 28 on the year for Joseph as Atlanta United goes down to Orlando and pulls off a 2-1 win.
I mean, that number sounds, you know, 28 goals, incredible. It really doesn't seem incredible, like having watched it, because we've known it's coming, right? Like we've seen it coming from a mile away, and it's more of just like, when was it going to happen? Obviously the players and everyone around the team has just talked about that all week as being, you know, it's just more of a formality at this point of when it was going to occur. But, you know, I think for more of the outside world, outside the Atlanta United bubble, it was like this big event that happened. And obviously you probably couldn't catch the game. I don't know if you've watched a replay yet or not thoroughly, but like the announcers were really into it, obviously. I mean, like that was the showpiece part of the game for them, was obviously to have this event go over their airwaves, and that's what they wanted to see. And eventually, thankfully, that's what they ended up getting. But to me, it didn't seem that way. I was, you know, I became much more concerned just with the result. And it looked like it could go, well, I wouldn't say look like it could go either way, but it just didn't look like for a while there in the second half, things were going to bounce our way. But thankfully they did. But it didn't, I guess my overall feeling on it is like, it's not as like momentous of an occasion as I kind of thought it were. I guess maybe it doesn't feel as big to me as it feels to a lot of other people.
Yeah, I would agree. It felt much more like an inevitability than anything else. Like you said, we saw it coming. We knew it was coming. Everyone knew it was coming. And the style in which Joseph has done it, we've talked about this before, just how often he scores inside the six, inside 12 yards. It doesn't really look incredible, you know? And the aesthetics of it maybe weren't as remarkable as we were led to believe, as some people around the league were freaking out a little bit. We also don't really have a great frame of reference for it, I guess. You know, you look back and look at names like Roy Lassiter being the name of the record holder that got broken. Who the hell is Roy Lassiter?
Why he's a total matter? Baller.
Right. Besides that.
Interesting note, by the way, about Roy Lassiter. John Fuller, one of our staff writers, pointed this out. His son actually played against Atlanta United last season. He plays for the LA Galaxy, or he did last year, apparently. And I'm taking John's word for this because I haven't gone back and fact checked it. But yeah, apparently he got on the field when they came to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So we can only assume that Joseph got with him like in the tunnel or something and did fusion with him. And that's what helped allow him to break this record.
Gotcha. You got to have that Lassiter DNA in you to really get off on these things.
I would also say that I was really happy, and Tata Martino mentioned this after the game as well, but it was something I was thinking just at the moment was that I was really happy to see the goal that Joseph broke the record on was like one of his prettier, classier finishes that he's had in his Atlanta United career, really, I think, as opposed to one of those like ones where he typically scores where he's like sliding in on the back post or, you know, scoring one of his scrappier goals, which tends to be like 80% of his goals are just like pure scrap and hustle. So it was nice to see that this one that broke the record, this one that will be played over and over again, was one that was quite beautiful. I thought the audacity to go with the chip, I just thought was incredible. I thought it was perfect for the moment.
Yeah, you and Bobby Boswell had the same sentiments. He said the same sort of thing on Twitter. So if we're in Boswell company, we're in good company for sure. But no, the optics of it were phenomenal. Just given the situation, given that Orlando had actually decided to make this a game for a little bit there, that was concerning as I was following along. But seeing just the way he pulled it off with making a couple people go to ground, with getting the ultimate Bendick face out of Joe Bendick. Oh, it was so good. There have been some great Bendick faces in the history of this rivalry, quotation marks, but that was the Bendick face to end all Bendick faces, staring into the eyes of the person who just murdered him on live television. He's just looking up at the person who just ruined his life, and Joseph is staring down, knowing he's his daddy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Incredible. Incredible.
So good. Joseph mentioning that Orlando does love to come out and try to play like it's the game of their lives against Atlanta. But Joseph says, we just keep fathering them. Get fathered. Get fathered, you losers.
I've never heard a more disrespectful quote, post-game quote, I think in my entire life.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Just beautiful.
Oh, totally.
Just beautiful.
Yeah, you know, he was mentioning he was pissed at Bendick earlier in the game for time wasting, you know, in the first half, which teams have tended to do against Atlanta, and Joseph does not take kindly to that kind of thing. So do it on you know, take your own risk when you do that against Joseph.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He had a weird quote. I think it kind of got lost in translation. I'll go ahead and put it out there. But this is on what he said to Bendick after he scored. He said, it makes me nervous when people want to kill time. I don't like when there's a dead ball and people go take a corner and the fans start yelling things at us. What is he going to say to me? ? Not quite sure what you mean there, Joseph. That was a weird translation there, guys. But I think he was
I assume he meant like
wasting time.
Yeah, I assume he meant like anxious, like makes him like, it gives him, you know, like he just wants to get on with the game. I don't think nervous was the right word to translate there, but I did. My favorite part of that quote is when he just asks rhetorically, what's he going to say to me? Because there really is nothing Joe Pendick can say to Joseph Martinez to try to gain the higher ground in this.
There's not anything Joe Pendick can debate. Say to the shop boy, like bagging groceries at a Kroger, or excuse me, Florida Publix. Like he's that far on the totem pole in society at this point. Like who is he better than at anything? Nothing. He's Joe Pendick.
The funny thing is he actually made some decent saves in this game, but then he also was pretty much at fault for their collapse. I mean, he was basically at fault for the opening goal against that Leandro Gonzalez Pires scored, which just bounced off his face. just awful.
It's an even different version of Pendick face. There were a multitude of Pendick faces throughout that entire thing. But yeah, he went for like a catch there on the bounce, and it didn't go well, man. It didn't go well at all.
Yeah. And that service, you know, you got to give credit to Ezequiel Barco for that service on that free kick. And if we could just speak a little bit more about Ezequiel Barco, I thought he was fantastic in this game, which was a great thing to see, despite the fact that I don't think he got a credit for that assist for an assist on that, because the assist really was from Pendick. And he was not involved in the buildup for Joseph's goal. But I still thought he was one of Atlanta's more influential players in the game. He was lively, full of energy, running all over the place, retaining possession well, which Atlanta United did. Like, they kept some of the best possession of the season in this game. I think the final passing numbers were like 91% completion, pass completion accuracy in this game. Incredible. But yeah, I thought Barco was really great. That was, you know, very good to see, obviously, from him and his situation and everything that's gone on. So very happy to see that from Barco.
Were you surprised to see him start?
I was, yeah, I definitely was. But I think, it made sense when we saw the starting lineup that, you know, if Gressel was going to be playing right back, then obviously that opens up the spot for him to come in. I just didn't see them, you know, I didn't see that one coming. I think that was the biggest surprise for everybody. But, yeah, I'm glad he was able to play well. And speaking of Gressel, Gressel played amazing. I'm not sure if anybody asked about that in our questions. I don't want to get ahead of us, but yeah, I thought he was fantastic in that position. I will pat myself on the back for just saying that I've always thought he's a right back, and
we've been saying that for months.
I'm sure he'll have worse games. Like, this wasn't the most difficult game probably for him to play at right back. You know, there are going to be teams with better wingers, and he won't be just playing right back strictly from here on out either. But yeah, I thought he showed that he can handle the position well, at least in the early stages of as he's, you know, I don't even want to say starting to learn the position, because he has said that he's played fullback when he was in Germany. So he knows how to play. He basically knows how to play any position on the field, to be honest. But yeah, it was just very optimistic signs from him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a few questions about that, too, and we'll get to them in a second. Did want to look over the possession numbers you were talking about. 62-38 possession in favor of Atlanta, and that 91% passing accuracy. Pretty darn impressive there. It was close on the scoreline, but statistically, looking up and down the box score, man, it could have been worse. The XG, too. I think Ben Bayer dropped the XG. It was something like it should have been 4-0 based on the chances, or 3-0 based on the chances.
Yeah, and I actually went back and rewatched the game, and I don't quite know about how highly I would rate some of those chances. I mean, I know one of them was like a rebound that fell to Joseph in front of goal, but it was still like kind of a scrappy chance. And I could see why on XG that it would come up as like a huge chance, but right. I'm not sure if it was that great. And then obviously the big missed chance he had was that one that Tito drilled right to his feet that he kind of fumbled up there. But yeah, I mean, it was what really surprised me was how few XG Orlando had in the game. I don't know. They seemed dangerous to me, actually, going forward on the counter. And I guess I feel like what tends to happen against Atlanta is that Atlanta actually doesn't concede many shots, but the shots that they do concede are usually quite good, and they concede a lot. But Orlando didn't really get many shots off. They didn't have any single good chances, like inside or even near the 6-yard box. And obviously, the one goal they scored was a a stunning goal from Scott Sutter, to be honest.
Yeah, and my reaction is, with anything Scott Sutter does, is who's Scott Sutter? Pretty much every time. I saw that name come up, I was like, who is that again? I had to look it up.
Apparently he's English or British. Yeah.
One of six spots on the day for Orlando, by the way.
I was looking back at, you know, speaking of Atlanta's possession and retention, the numbers are quite incredible in terms of just looking, going player by player. Eric Rometty, 4 incomplete passes in the game. Michael Parkhurst, 2 incomplete. Julian Gressel, 6 incomplete. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, 3 incomplete. Lorentowicz, 3 incomplete. Like, and all these guys had, like, you know, over 60 passes, except for Jeff Lorentowicz there that I mentioned. So it's just amazing that they were just able to pass the ball around. And that was one thing. Is it O'Connor? I don't even remember his first name. The Orlando coach who looks barfy.
James O'Connor.
Yeah, he was pretty. He was very upset after the game. I heard his post game comments saying that he, you know, expected more and wanted to do it for the fans and all that. And it's like, I felt like it was grandstanding by him, to be honest.
I'm looking at the quote sheet, and I do want to talk a bit about James O'Connor, who I was stuck in traffic from this high school football game I was leaving, right? So I'm just listening to the 92.9 post-game wrap-up. Mike Conti, Jason Longstort, doing a great job as always. But they broadcasted the O'Connor press conference, and it's the first time I've heard him talk. I've seen his face, and his face, just the expression on it, I referred to it earlier in the week as James O'Connor looks like a man who's constantly about to throw up all over you. It just kind of looks like if he took one more step or if he breathed the wrong way, immediately projectile vomit everywhere. He just constantly looks like he's nervous and wants to just expel everything from his body.
Once you mentioned that, now that's the only thing I can see. And you're totally right. It's spot on.
You can't get over it. Right. Then I heard him talk, and the description I came up with was like, elderly Irish gnome in a Disney movie. He sounds like he's 80 years old, but then you pair it with an Irish kind of, is he Irish or Scottish? I don't know.
I think he's Irish.
You pair it with that Irish accent, and the whole thing comes together for like a angry sidekick in a Disney movie that like a character comes across, and at first they're really surly, but then by the end you realize they have a great heart. He sounds like that, which makes everything sound really, really silly. And his depression coupled with that silliness in his voice made for a wonderful listen. It really did.
Yeah, totally. I have nothing to add. He's a caricature.
He's only won one game since he's been in charge as well. I've seen some rumblings already that is he even going to be retained next year?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because he alluded in the post-game press conference about like things he wants to do next year or whatever. I think he's kind of trying to position himself to be in that role as a head coach, but I don't know if they're going to want to keep him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what he's done to really earn it other than just kind of have the job at this point. It's not like the defense has gotten better. It's not like anything's really gotten better for them. Reminder, yeah, that one game since early May. So the losing streak started on May 13th when we beat them the first time. Bookended that now, but they had the one win against Toronto, which is hilarious because good Lord, Toronto, what are you doing? But now they're in last place in the East. They are, if San Jose hadn't collapsed last night, they would have been really close to dropping to last in the entire league. But man, it's bad. Colorado has more points than them, Joe. Colorado.
Ooh.
I mean, Colorado lost, what, 8-0 last night?
Oh, did they? I didn't even watch. I was... Oh,
gosh. Hold on. I'm going to check that Colorado score. It was bad.
I was actually living a human life instead of watching the Colorado Rapids on a Saturday night.
I wasn't watching the Colorado Rapids. I was getting updates through the Twitter sphere and whatnot. 6-0 Real Salt Lake.
Oh my gosh.
That's the team. That's the team that has more points than Orlando City at this point. But, you know, Orlando City has Scott Sutter and a good arts and crafts department. So they got that going for them, which is nice.
Yeah.
Good for them. All right, 2-1 win in this one. You guys had questions about it and some good questions here coming from all over the place. We will start with a question from Michael Ruiz, who asked, Bendick face or Martinez stare, what's better?
What's better? Oh, well, I guess, yeah, Bendick face is, it has its, you know, they're great in different ways. It's like this is like apples to oranges, because Bendick face is totally hilarious. Martinez face is, you know, a different emote. It's a different, you know, emotion that derives. I think.
What do you derive more joy from? What makes you?
You know, happy? Bendick face. Bendick face.
Okay. Okay.
For me, it's Bendick face.
I think I would agree. I don't know. There's some Schadenfreude with it, I think.
Because when you see Bendick face, you know something very good for Atlanta United has happened, or whoever Orlando's opponent is on the night, which is always fun.
Which is also good for Atlanta United.
Bendick face is inherently good thing, right? So I'll go with Bendick face.
And much more memeable, I feel like. It was nice. You did a great tweet during that where you like screenshotted the Bendick face portion of that video I made for
your video. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that made me laugh really, really hard. It was beautiful. Well done. Well done on that. I'm going to agree with Bendick face as well. This next question comes from Gabe Gonzalez. How are we doing, Gabe? Rate Barco's performance in his first game back as a starter. Did you see any big noticeable impact from him, Joe Patrick?
Yeah, we've already talked about him a little bit. I thought he was great, and I wanted to add one more interesting note. So I've got a list of the highest pass combinations of two Atlanta United players, and two of the top three involved Barco. The number one pass combination was McCann to Barco, and the number two combination was Barco to Remedy. So I think that just shows how involved he was. And I think what we're seeing from Barco this season, at least with the current construct of this squad, when you have players like Almiron who wants to get forward and get into the box to help support Joseph, and also a guy like Tito Villalba on the other side, who's kind of operates as like a striker, basically, definitely as a pure forward. Barco is definitely much more involved in buildup than I think a lot of us anticipated, right? I think a lot of us, especially when he comes in as the record signing in MLS, you expect him to be scoring goals and making assists and doing all these things that are like clear, tangible production stats, you know?
Right.
But what we've seen from him is being much more helpful to the team in terms of keeping the ball, recycling possession. And I think you can make the case that you probably want a little more from somebody who's, you know, supposed to be so valuable to the team. But considering the players he has around him, there's no need for him to try to force the issue and be doing things that doesn't really help the team. And I think right now what he is doing, which is doing these things in buildup, is helping is giving the team, you know, the biggest benefit possible. So I thought he was really good, really looked really lively, had good energy, which you would expect from a guy who hasn't, you know, played a lot of minutes lately. So yeah, I thought he was good.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised by how much Darlington Nagbe he had in him, with as far as just circulating and everything like that. I think we all expected an Assad upgrade, and we didn't get that. And I think that's thrown a lot of people off, but he's still valuable for what he does in a big way, especially with Nagbe out of the lineup, I think, which is another question we'll get to in a little bit. But it's still very, very effective, and from everything I've gathered, he was very good.
Yeah, I think... you're totally right that Assad is like a much more direct player, right, who wants to go at goal and, you know, create something in the final third. And I think that, you know, it's good for Barco, at least if we're looking at this optimistically, to say that at the age of 19, he's already shown that he's very good at kind of some of the more fundamental things when it comes to operating in the attack in terms of keeping possession and not losing the ball so much. Although he does lose it at times, but I feel like the times that he does lose the ball is when he goes forward and tries to like go one-on-one versus somebody, he'll just like make a dumb mistake. So, and I'm not trying to say that he's like the perfect player or anything, but I think that like if you were to compare him and Assad at the same age, I think that Barco is like considerably more more advanced as a player than a player like Assad.
Absolutely.
4 years ago, you know.
Absolutely. And I think a large part of the question going forward is just, will we see him hold on to that spot? Because you've got to think he's stuck there now, right? This is his spot in the lineup now. And unless he does something else goofy, which I can't imagine he does, again, like, dude's learned his lesson. I'm positive after a month out, this is his spot throughout the rest of the year. He's going to start.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And it just shows, and we're going to get to this because we have some more questions about this, but it just shows, you know, we've talked about the selection issues that Tata Martino has, and those selection issues will just keep on evolving. You know, like before we thought, you know, before this game, we thought, oh, is it going to be Gressel or Barco? And now it's looking like, is it going to be Gressel or Escobar? You know, so that'll just keep evolving. And I'm sure at some point it'll be between, you know, two other players when more players start getting healthy and things like that. So
speaking of Gressel and Escobar, this next question comes from Richie Rich on the Twitters. We've already talked a bit about it, but he asked, how did Gressel do at right back? And who would you prefer between him and Escobar? Personally, I prefer Escobar, but Gressel has been the main supplier for Martinez. And I want to double up with this question. I want to pair this with another one from Chirp Street, who says, Escobar missing the next few weeks is a blessing in disguise. Gressel can now develop at right back, and the Five Stripes will have an offensive juggernaut formation for the playoffs. Then they can plug in Escobar if a more defensively stout lineup is needed. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Chirp Street.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, what I really like about what we're seeing from Gressel and what we've seen from Escobar so far this season is that they are very different types. They have very different skill sets from that position, right? So Gressel is a guy who will, yeah, give you better service. He's not as athletic, still serviceable enough. I'm not trying to say he's unathletic, but Escobar is definitely a guy who will has a lot of physicality, will throw his body around, is pretty pacey. Wow, did I just say pacey? Wow, okay. Gressel's a guy, you know, I really liked what we saw from him, less so about, you know, I kind of expected him to be swinging in a lot of crosses, you know, from that wing spot when Atlanta was in possession. He really didn't do that much from what I recall. He seemed to, you know, just be recycling the possession a lot from those wide spaces. And I really liked, you know, the way he was involved for Joseph's goal, what we saw from him there, where he was making an underlapping run, or he kind of he moved inside. And that's something you might not see from a guy like Escobar. Julian Gressel has, you know, just a little bit more vision, a little bit more connection with the forwards from having played with them and played, you know, in those positions more this season. So I think that, yeah, you're right that against like a weaker opposition, you might want to put Gressel there, and against, you know, a team that has a more attacking winger, even if it's not a great team, but if it's like a team like Montreal or something with a Piatti type player, you want to make sure you have locked down. You know, you could play a guy like Escobar. So, yeah, I think they both offer value. I think that both are options at this point to play the position. So I think it's only a good thing for Tata Martino.
I think my frame of mind right now looking forward is, what lineup lets us beat Red Bulls? Because that's my biggest concern.
Well, let's talk about that, yeah.
So my question is, fully loaded Atlanta United, who do we put out against Red Bulls? And we'll start with that right back position.
You want to do whole lineup?
Let's just look at the right back for now, since we're talking about it.
Yeah, at right back, I would play Escobar there.
You play Escobar. I think I would agree, just for the defensive aspect of it, because you're going to have people bombing forward.
I think come playoffs, you will probably see Escobar start most of those games if this is the situation that it's coming down to. At the right back position, I think that you probably will see Escobar, because it's so nice to have Gressel on the bench. He's a very valuable bench piece because of his versatility, right?
Right.
If you need a more attacking option at right back later in the game, you can put him there, but also he can come in for a different position. if you need. So, and he can, you know, you can bring a guy like Gressel onto the field and change the shape, and that can kind of give you a boost sometimes in game. So, I think he is very valuable as a bench player, and I think that that will kind of maybe work against him in terms of his minutes in the playoffs, unfortunately for him. But yeah, I think that that's one reason you might see that.
I would agree. I would agree. Joe, we have breaking news.
Are you serious?
No. Well, it's not so much breaking news as it is breaking trash coming from one of our dear, dear listeners. And this has happened right as we were talking about this. Zach Lane, good old Zach Lane. You may know him as Zach Attack on Twitter, at Zach Attack. He says, this isn't a question so much as it is a reminder that I was calling for Gressel at right back about 5 months ago, and Joe thought it was a bad idea. Zach, what show have you been listening to? What, Zach?
How dare you, Zach?
Gressel at right back for longer than you. We were OG Gressel right back. How dare you? How dare you? It sounds like you're listening to a show that, like, I don't know, sells merch or something.
I don't deny that I probably have said, like, for a specific game, maybe, that he should be, you know, playing somewhere else.
But don't let him gaslight you.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Gressel is a right back long term. I've been saying it since day one.
In your face, Zach. In your face. We have a couple more lineup questions going through here as well. Do we really want to touch on them right now? Because we just kind of, I'm not sure how much it relates to Orlando. We can touch on it in a preview show. Let's save it.
Yeah.
Because we just don't know. We're still waiting for Nagby and Garza and the rest to get back into training before we really even have to even think.
Right. Let's not put the cart before the horse here, to be honest. You know, let's not, you know, we also don't want to curse anybody.
Exactly. Which we've been prone to do for ages.
Yes.
This one comes from Elijah Newsom, and he asks, is it rude or disrespectful that Orlando City didn't acknowledge the record being broken? It's common courtesy to at least mention a record being broken. He also says, I was at the game. Maybe I didn't hear it through all the cheering. Frankly, I'm totally cool with them not mentioning it at all. Like, I wouldn't, if like Will Johnson had broken the record for whatever Will Johnson could possibly break the record for, I would rather them not mention it at the home stadium if it happened against us. I kind of thought the rest of the acknowledgement around the league was a little weird too. Like San Jose, I don't know if you saw this, Joe, San Jose put out a video of Chris Wondolowski, like saying, great job, congrats on breaking my record. All that kind of thing.
That's gross.
It was kind of like, hey, remember when we were relevant? That's how I took the that's how I took the video. And I thought like a nice tweet from Wanda would have been enough. Red Bulls handed it well. Just Bradley Wright Phillips sent a quick message to Joseph, and that's it over Twitter. Just a nice tweet. Just a nice tweet. I don't see any real reason for the rest of the league to acknowledge, especially not Orlando City. I think there would have been an absolute riot at that stadium had they acknowledged that.
Yeah, maybe that's imagine. Why. Maybe they made the conscious decision to help the police by not saying anything.
Yeah. Of course, at this point, I think they're just broken more than anything. I'm not sure Orlando City fans have much fight left in them. It's veering towards ennui and apathy at this point.
Yeah, and I do think that they had a small delay in the game. It wasn't too long, but I think it was just a little delay, and I think it was probably requested by the TV broadcasters and media people that they could have some time to kind of, you know, show the highlights of the goal and talk about it a little bit and stuff like that. I guess Elijah is correct in saying that like there was no announcement from the PA announcer or on the scoreboards or anything like that of the record, and I'm with you on that one. I would just as rather them not talk about it unless it was a home game.
Yep, I would agree. And I think you can see, you've seen it before in things like baseball and basketball when there are like a million games in a year. But when you have kind of a limited amount of opportunities to come to games and see things like this, there's less less time for posturing and glad handing and other things like that to kind of make it look fancy than it actually is. And like we mentioned before, the whole aesthetic of it for us, the whole mindset of it for us was kind of, oh, he scored again. Every game. It's all good. Same old, same old. Speaking more about the record, this one comes from Andrew Freeman, this thought more than a question. They said all week that they weren't trying to think about the record, but there were a couple of times you could definitely tell they were trying to feed Joseph the ball. Is this true, Joe Patrick?
Yes, I think that is true. I think it definitely looked like they were trying to feed him. I'm not surprised that they would say that they're not concerned about the record. And I think to an extent, like, I think both things can kind of be true, to be honest. But yeah, I'm with Andrew in that I definitely felt like they were trying to force it a little bit to Joseph. There were players that had some opportunities to take shots and they didn't. Maybe that was just, you know, they were just trying to play smart soccer or whatnot. But yeah, I would say they were trying to feed him. And I think that there was probably also a little bit of, you know, misdirection to what they were saying to the media. But you wouldn't expect, I mean, that's just normal team talk, right? Like, that's just normal, like, responsible media handling. Like, you're not going to go out and say, yeah, we're trying to get him the record, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it would be smart to do that.
No, not at all. But they did acknowledge that he had seemed a little on edge. This comes from Tata Martino in the post-game press conference. I'm sure Doug Roberson asked him the questions there from the AJC. But he says, with Joseph, we knew he was going to break the record. It was just a matter of if he could do it sooner or later. The good thing is he did it sooner. Now this will calm him down. On top of that, he did it with a very nice goal. And he goes on to mention a couple times that he's just going to calm down a bit. He says this will calm him down, and he's lost the anxiety now that he's got the record. So
Tata could tell there's a little bit of nerves there, a little bit of anxiousness to kind of get the record off his back and on to the next thing. And now really, what else does Joseph Martinez have to prove this year? Nothing.
Right.
Dude can just focus on going out there and getting the win.
Well, the thing that really pointed out to me that the team definitely was thinking about it was Joseph talked about it after the game. He said, yeah, at halftime, basically his teammates were like giving him shit for not having broken the record. and then he was like, yeah, now that I've broken, I can make jokes back to them. But like he said that like at halftime, his teammates were like, you know, yeah, talking about it. So obviously it was something that they were trying to do.
Amazing. Amazing. God bless this team. God bless this team. All right, Joe Patrick.
Yeah, I do have some final thoughts. And speaking of quotes, what the hell is a baby comes with bread under their arm?
Yeah, I didn't want to plug that in the first part of that quote, but the full quote, the first two lines of Tata talking about Joseph Martinez is congratulations to both of them. I think in the U.S. there's a saying, a baby comes with bread under the arm. I think Amelia came with a goal under the arm. Okay, many things here. Many questions. Many questions. The first of them being, who's Amelia? Who?
Oh, I know. It's Leandro Gonzalez Perez's baby.
Ah, okay. Wonderful. Okay, well, but we're talking about Joseph. I don't understand. But that's good. That's okay. Good for Amelia.
So that probably clears. But the most confusing part to me, he says, in the U.S., there's a saying, a baby comes with bread under the arm. That must be an Argentine saying, correct? Like that, there. I've never heard that.
I've never. And I heard still it don't know what American it means. Context. I completely understand what he's saying. It's our version of like a silver spoon in the mouth. But that seems a lot more bougie than bread, which makes sense for America, I guess.
The phrase a baby comes with bread under the arm sounds like a mistranslated Google Translate.
One of those where you've like put it back and forth between the translate like a few times. Yeah, absolutely. A baby comes with bread. I think that might be the new official motto of Five Strike Final.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, we can put it on our club seal or whatever that we make whenever we get around to it. It'll be on the t-shirts we're never selling.
Everyone else can use Quiero Cantar Contigo, and we'll use A Baby Comes With Bread Under the Arm.
I love it. What does it mean? Who knows? Do we love it? Yes. Yes, we
It's up for interpretation, in my opinion.
Yeah, broad. Broad. It's an abstract piece of art. Interpret it how you want. Project your own feelings onto that quote. Any other final thoughts, Joe Patrick?
Can we talk about J.A. Patrick 2000?
Yes. I thought about bringing this up at the beginning of the show, but I couldn't quite squeeze it in. We had an intruder. We had a spy in the midst. I don't know quite.
He tried to become between me and Sam.
He did.
He slid into your DMs.
To gate some things. So Joe Patrick, our dear friend Joe Patrick, who is alive and well and right next to me right now, in a spiritual way, has a Twitter handle, as many of us do, that is JAPatrick200. Go ahead and follow him at JAPatrick200. Some conniving individual who I haven't figured out their motives yet made an account on Twitter with a handle JAPatrick2000, right? Throw an extra zero behind it. Make the same profile picture, make the same bio, but none of the tweets, none of the everything else that goes along with the wonderful JAPatrick200 Twitter account. But on appearances, it looks exactly like it. It looks exactly like it. So when I received a DM in the Twitters that I had to go to the request for from Joe Patrick, I was very confused because Joe Patrick has messaged me before and I didn't have to do any request thing because we follow each other. We follow each other because we care about each other. So I thought that was weird. And so it got weirder. The question was, Sam, I have forgotten the Twitter password for DSS. Can you send along the login in information? It was login and then in. It was a typo. And so I said, new phone, who dis? Luckily so, because if I had not looked at anything, I would have totally sent along the Twitter information, even though it was weird that it wasn't over our Slack channel or anything like that. So we had someone trying to cop the DSS information for likely nefarious purposes there, Joe Patrick.
I wonder who it could have been. I wonder who it could have been.
I don't know, man. I don't know. They seem to have been... They shared with me very quickly that they had tricked Rob Ushery. He's going to be mad at us for mentioning this. They had tricked Rob Ushery into thinking that you had just now followed Dirty South Soccer on Twitter. So Rob sees the notification that Patrick2000 has followed and immediately assumes that it's you and goes, well, thanks, Joe, for finally following us after, you know, running the site for the last 6 months or whatever you've been doing. They were quick to send that information along. I halfway believe it was like an Atlanta United fan that thought they were being funny, but I just want to remind everyone that's not you or me and anyone else that writes for DSS, none of you are funny. None of you. And you should never try to be funny. And this especially wasn't funny in any way. At least try to be clever with it. Do something interesting. Lord. The other more fun option, though, than one of our terrible, terrible fans being their normal selves, is that it was an Orlando fan trying to get in on the inside and tweet some weird shit.
Yeah, it just came off at the end of it all. It just came off as very, like, weak and timid and pitiful, honestly. I know Rob was sharing with me he was getting some spam, too, that day. So it was pretty funny to see the doxers and the, you know, the internet trolls coming out. It was my first experience with it, so it was fun to experience.
Yeah, I guess. What we're saying is keep your head on a swivel and just remember that in America, a baby is born with bread under their arm. Just remember.
Absolutely.
My final thought here, Joe Patrick, is, and I kind of mentioned at the top of the show, this could be a near perfect weekend for us. We had the draw in the Hudson River Derby. We had the win against Orlando with Joseph breaking the record. And tonight, God willing, if Wayne Rooney and Yamil Assad put something together, and Lucho Acosta for that matter, who's been very good, put something together and pull off a point of any kind against New York Red Bulls, this could be a near perfect weekend for us as we head down the home stretch. This is the home stretch, man. We're more than three quarters away through the season, only 8 games left for us in the regular season.
and Supporter Shield on the horizon. It's starting to look pretty good, especially with our upcoming schedule, which is full of Colorados and San Jose's and other terrible, terrible teams.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be an exciting month here up ahead. It feels like the playoffs, right? It feels like you got to be watching. You know, obviously, you're going to be watching every Atlanta and Ida game, but obviously, you have to be keeping tabs on all of our competitors because those games are just as important. So, it's an exciting time in MLS.
Exciting, exciting, good stuff, good stuff. Joe Patrick, did we have a Lorenowitz man of the night from this one?
I would personally give it to Jeff Lorenowitz.
Oh, I love it.
He had three incomplete passes. He led all players on the field in tackles with six. He was very efficient with them. He was 6 for 8. He just seemed like almost every time Orlando broke forward, he was just like a freaking brick wall, man. Like they would run right into him, and he was just coming into challenges so hard, not leaving his feet, but just bodying people. I thought he was, you know, extremely efficient, very good.
A classic Lorenowitz performance.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
That's Lorenowitz man of the night in its purest form. Jeff, your check is in the mail. God, so good, so good. I do thank you. I do want to thank you too. I mentioned this earlier in private, but I do want to mention in public. Just thank you for reminding him that he wasn't allowed to score while I was away. It really meant a lot.
It would have been so wrong. It would have been so cruel and so wrong.
God, I had this whole plan, though, if it did happen miraculously somehow, that I was just going to be oblivious to it and act like it never happened just to mess with people. It would have been a lot of fun. but he's saving it for later in the year like he did last year, and I'm going to be there and in person and on the Twitter for it, and I'm going to play the character and lose my mind. That's going to be a lot of fun. So hang tight for that, guys. Hang tight for that. All right. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Sweet. That'll move us to our final segment of the night. Our quote of the night comes from one of my new personal heroes, James O'Connor, J-O-C, as we like to call him. And I'm going to do my best to do my O'Connor elderly gnome in an Irish Disney movie voice in just a moment as soon as I get mentally prepared for this.
Wave your hand in front of your face, you know, calm yourself.
Obviously very disappointed. It was a game we wanted to try and win for the supporters. Very disappointed. Extremely disappointed.
Wow. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you. Thank you. I do what I can. I do voice work. I do voice work for a living. Contact me. All right.
That's on Fiverr.
What? Huh?
Fiverr. That's like the voiceover. Never mind.
Anyway, shout out to Lucy Dawkins. Shout out to Phoebe Bridger. Shout out to Julian Baker. Shout out to Mitski. Shout out to Kamasi Washington. And shout out to LeVar Burton. I know you're listening.
Shout out Jorge Thieler. Shout out Justin Belhuis. Shout out Kevin Egan. Julian Sackvitz. Excuse me. Dan Gargan and Seal. For our great outro music last week.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Big thanks to Seal, as always. We got a big one, DC United, coming up next Sunday. We'll have a preview show up for that sometime this week. Stay tuned on the Twitter sphere and whatnot. Go ahead and rate us 5 stars on iTunes. We did a great job. This show was kick-ass. We were just really, really good today. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. We haven't picked one up in a while, guys. It's kind of...
Please clap.
Please clap. Please clap. Anyway, do that. Follow us on Twitter. Follow Dirty South Soccer on Twitter. And check Dirty South Soccer for all your Atlanta United content, because it's real good. And go read Joe Patrick's piece over on The Athletic about Joseph Martinez. It's very, very good. Go read that. We're very proud of him. He did a good job. Good work, Joe.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, y'all. That'll do it. Check y'all later. Bye, y'all.
See ya. My founder.